call this meeting of the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy to order. There is a quorum present. Members, today we have two bills on the calendar, House File 91 and House File 506. Before we get to the bills, we need to move the minutes from the last meeting. Representative Becker Finn, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for January 24th, 2023?
So moved, Chair.
Representative Becker Finn moves the minutes from January 24th, 2023. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for January 24th, 2023 are approved. The first bill we have today is a Representative Liebling bill, House File 901. And since you are not, 91, excuse me, and since you are not on the committee, Representative Liebling, I will move your bill. And I move that House File 91 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. We do have an A10 author's amendment, so I will also move the amendment. I believe that is to put the bill in the shape that Representative Liebling desires, but would you like to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing House File 91 today. So the author's amendment makes more clear an exception that is already in law. So as members, I'm sure, are aware, there are a number of statutes that are various degrees of homicide when a fetus is killed in the course of some other kind of criminal act. And there's an exception there for abortion. It makes it just clear that, and by the way, it is already clear in law that the person who is carrying the fetus, the pregnant person, is not criminally liable under any of those statutes. But to just because in this bill, the definition that is being pointed to is being repealed. So we wanted to just take the opportunity to make sure that it's really clear in law that abortion is different. It is not, no one would be criminally liable under those statutes for an abortion or for helping with an abortion, performing an abortion.
All right, and before we move to discussion on Representative Liebling's amendment, there is an A15 amendment. Who's offering that?
That'll be me, Chair.
Representative Novotny, to the A15 amendment to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. The A10 amendment would expand the ability of literally any person who performs an abortion to be exempted from criminal prosecution for murder, manslaughter, or assault of an unborn child. Current law exempts physicians, licensed physicians, and physicians in training under a licensed physician. The Doe versus Minnesota decision states that a physician only is over and under inclusive. My amendment to the author's amendment simply brings the exception to murder, manslaughter, and assault of an unborn child in line with the judge's decisions of Doe versus Minnesota. It replaces the word person with licensed physician, advanced practicing registered nurse, or a physician's assistant. In practicality, it's a situation that I struggle with, I don't understand. In November, because of a bill that I had in the previous session that would require abortion facilities to be licensed and inspected, I was called extreme because I would hope that the mothers that are making this decision in life to end the life of the baby would do it under medical supervision. And I was told that this is extreme and we're pushing it into the back alley. We're told by the authors, well-tooled verbiage in response to any questions about the bills that have come up, that this isn't necessary, but we're taking the medical definitions of people that can perform an abortion and replacing it with the word person. So it doesn't have to be a doctor or someone under a doctor's physician. It doesn't have to be done at a facility that is regulated and inspected and as safe as it can be considering the seriousness of the practice. And now, under this amendment that the author has, as long as it is with the consent of the pregnant individual or the pregnant individual's representative, I assume that means mother, that anyone can perform this abortion. And I don't mean to make light of it or be glib, but we're literally at the point where Billy's Bait Shop, an abortion facility, can be performing these facilities, these radical procedures. I'm going to see if I can find a bumper sticker that says I'm running out of conspiracy theories. I'm going to have to get new ones because all my conspiracy theories have been proven true. If it really is the goal that these horrible procedures be conducted in a facility that is safe as it can be, considering the seriousness of the operation, I think it needs to be done by someone that is at least some medical person, some medical background and training, not just a person. So I ask for your support and I ask for a roll call.
There will be a roll call. Representative Liebling to the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would ask members to vote no on the amendment to the amendment. No, as you may know, I chair the Health Committee, and usually health regulation takes place in the Health Committee. And we don't regulate health care providers and their scopes of practice usually in the criminal law. And that's what this is. This is an exception to criminal liability. And it was never intended, and under current law, it's not intended to criminalize abortion. So, whether the concerns about who can do it, who should do it, and without getting into all of that, this is not the place where we should be putting those kinds of restrictions. I think also this is actually a very harmful amendment to the amendment because, for example, a pharmacist is not mentioned in the amendment to the amendment. A pharmacist, then, if this was to go into the law in the exception, now it looks to a court like a pharmacist, in fact, who gave abortion medication to a patient could possibly be committing one of these crimes. And that's not the intent of the statutes here, and it just muddies things up. We don't need to regulate health care providers in the criminal statutes. And, in fact, that's part of what the anti-abortion forces have done throughout many years and what we need to be undoing.
And we will have discussion on this amendment, but I'll just say with respect to both the underlying amendment and the amendment to the amendment, please do keep any comments really focused on the amendments, and we'll have full discussion on the bill as well. We purposely only scheduled two bills today because we wanted to make sure to have full discussion and members have an opportunity to speak to the bill. So with that, discussion on the amendment to the amendment. Representative Novotny, any closing remarks on your amendment?
Thank you, Chair Mueller. In response to the author's testimony, I'm bringing this amendment to this amendment in this committee because your amendment is in front of this committee. I did not bring this amendment on my own. We're hearing it here because it's here. Thank you, Chair.
All right. A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll on the A15 amendment.
Chair Mueller?
No.
Mueller says no. Vice Chair Feist?
No.
Feist says no. Representative Novotny?
Yes.
Novotny says yes. Representative Becker Finn?
No.
Becker Finn says no. Representative Curran?
No.
Curran says no. Representative Ingen?
Yes.
Ingen says no. Yes. Representative Fraser?
No.
Fraser says no. Representative Grussell?
Yes.
Grussell, yes. Representative Hollins?
No.
Hollins, no. Representative Hudson?
Yes.
Hudson, yes. Representative Hewitt?
No.
Hewitt, no. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Mueller, yes. Representative Pinto?
No.
Pinto, no. Representative Tapke?
No.
Tapke, no. Representative Witte?
Yes.
Witte says yes. There being six ayes and nine nays, that concludes the roll call vote.
There being six ayes and nine nays, the motion does not prevail and the A15 amendment is not adopted. Now back to the A10 amendment. Discussion on the A10 amendment. All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the A10 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
The A10 amendment is adopted. All right, now we'll move on to the bill as amended. Representative Liebling.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair and members. So members, I think we all know that freedom is one of the bedrock values of our nation. We, in fact, in the legislature here, we talk about it all the time. And freedom does include individual liberty. So the House has passed the PRO Act. We had a big debate about that. And that, I believe, reaffirmed part of what makes this a free nation. The fundamental right to make our own most deeply personal decisions without interference from government. We affirmed Minnesotans' fundamental right to individual liberty, personal privacy, and equality in decisions about whether and when to reproduce. These rights were safeguarded by the U.S. Supreme Court for 50 years under Roe v. Wade until the composition of that court changed and those protections were ripped away. In Minnesota, we're fortunate to have the same rights recognized under our Minnesota Constitution through a case called Doe v. Gomez. Before Roe was the law, and while Roe was the law, and under Doe v. Gomez, anti-abortion politicians and groups have used many tactics to chip away at these rights, reduce access to abortion, and interfere in some of the most deeply personal decisions that Minnesotans must make. For years, we've heard shaming, inflammatory rhetoric meant to convince Minnesotans that politicians should be managing abortion access instead of the people most closely affected, those carrying the pregnancy and their families and their doctors. In case everyone doesn't know this, and it's strange to have to say this out loud, but women are as capable as men of weighing their own moral, situational, and practical issues in their own lives and making their own decisions. This constant attack on Minnesotans' right to access abortion is evident throughout our statutes. Our laws contain many outdated, unused laws, including many that are not actually in effect because they've been ruled unconstitutional. This patchwork of confusing laws makes it difficult for Minnesotans and Minnesota's healthcare providers to know what the law actually is. I have received emails from people who think that in this bill we're changing some things that we're actually not, because many of the laws on the books are unconstitutional and not in effect. For instance, under Minnesota law, there is no gestational limit for abortion. There is no gestational limit. This has been true since Hodgson v. Lawson struck down Minnesota's potential liability or potential viability law in 1976. So in fact, since 1976, there is no law, no actual law on the books that limits when in a pregnancy there can be an abortion. But leaving unconstitutional, outdated, and conflicting laws on the books is harmful because it actually chills access to abortion, and this is, in fact, what some politicians want. But doctors want to practice medicine. They don't want to be investigated, sued, or prosecuted. And when these worries hang over their heads, they will tend to practice defensively. This we see happening in other states that have all but outlawed abortion. The chilling effect reduces access to abortion and other essential health care that Minnesotans need. In fact, Some families that would never dream of having an abortion find themselves impacted when physicians are afraid that government is standing over their shoulder, second-guessing their medical decisions. An abortion, in fact, is health care. It is safer than many other procedures, including giving birth. Yet many of the restrictions in law single out abortion for extra safety rules coupled with penalties. It is time to remove those from the books. Patients who seek abortion or other reproductive care must have the same privacy afforded to other kinds of medical care. It is time for politicians to get out of the room and let the patient decide, with the help of their doctor, family, and other supports that they choose, what their care should be. And that is why this bill is here, to clean up our statutes and to make the law clearer for everyone. We know that people have strong feelings about abortion. We understand that. This is a very emotional topic for everyone. People who have abortions have strong feelings about abortion. Each person deserves the freedom to weigh their own feelings and situation and make their own decisions in their own lives without politicians injecting our feelings into theirs. Please support House File 91.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. We do have a number of testifiers who have signed up to testify, and so you will have 90 seconds for your testimony. We'll be timing everybody. And I will call the person who's up and then the person on deck. And if the person on deck can kind of start making their way down, that would be helpful and will help move us along too so we can get to a full discussion for our members. The first testifier is Kathy Blazer, and on deck is Teresa Collette. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you. I am Kathy Blazer, Co-Executive Director of Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. House File 91 aids and abets the most heinous of criminals, human and sex traffickers. These traffickers are happily watching this legislature remove all the protections we have in our abortion laws. We know that women and girls continue to be victimized by traffickers in our state. FBI data for 2019 shows Minnesota had the second highest number of trafficking arrests of any state. We also know that traffickers take advantage of inadequate abortion regulations to keep these girls under their control. The average age of a trafficked girl in Minnesota is 14. A trafficker who can simply walk an enslaved girl into an abortion facility with no other adult even knowing knows he can keep trafficking with impunity. Our parental notification laws offers a first layer of protection for these young victims by ensuring that someone other than the trafficker is aware of her situation. It opens the door, perhaps even just a crack, to let some light into her nightmare. Parental notification offers the hope of rescue for the girl. Whether she's from out of state or from Minnesota, our parental notification law, which is still under appeal, requires that the parents be informed. Notifying the parent could be the first step that leads to her rescue. Women, particularly women who are daily being victimized by human and sex traffickers, are begging you to advocate for their safety and vote no on House File 91.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Blazer. The next testifier is Teresa Collette, and on deck is Kelly Jansen. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is Teresa Collette. I'm a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, and I direct the Pro-Life Center there. My testimony today is, though, founded primarily on the fact that I also litigate in this area. My brief to the United States Supreme Court in the Dobbs case was cited with approval by the majority. In addition to that representation, I currently represent a group called Mothers Offering Maternal Support in seeking to intervene in the Doe v. Minnesota case. In every other hearing regarding this particular piece of legislation in both the Senate and the House, there have been allegations that multiple laws have been declared unconstitutional under Doe v. Minnesota. While the judge did issue a ruling to that effect on July the 13th. Judgment was entered on the 13th. The opinion was July 11th. The case remains open as evidenced by the docket sheet in the case. In addition to it being open, in order for us to pursue our motion to intervene and present evidence in the case, it is also on appeal, as noted by the prior testimony. What that means is that in this particular case, my client, Mothers Offering Maternal Support, has reason to believe, based on the judge's own judgment, that the Attorney General failed in his duty to present any evidence disputing the need or the effectiveness of these laws. In fact, the court record is devoid of a single piece of evidence by the government officials indicating that there's any difference between minors and adult decision-making capacity. A simple fact that's been recognized by the United States Supreme Court and is the basis of our juvenile justice system. Therefore, the inadequate defense is what gives my clients the right to intervene. Thank you. Please vote no.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Kelly Jansen, and on deck, we have Maggie Hange. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Mohler and committee members. My name is Kelly Jansen. I'm speaking today as a private citizen. My background has been in protecting kids in various roles throughout my life. The story of one known American abortionist, Kermit Gosnell, should be concerning to everyone. Gosnell was an abortion provider in Pennsylvania. He was convicted of the murders of three infants who were born alive. He was convicted of manslaughter in connection with the death of one woman during an abortion procedure. He was also convicted of many other medically related crimes. One of the prosecutors, who described herself as pro-choice, said, "This is controversial, but 24 weeks, give me a break. You're 6 months pregnant, you're big. Babies are kicking around in there." Doctors who want to practice medicine take an oath to do no harm. The law should be concerned about doctors doing late-term abortion, as abortions in the third trimester are performed on babies that are viable outside the womb. The same child within the womb is the same child that many of you fight for in family court or as trafficking victims. House File 91 would essentially make it legal for everything Kermit Gosnell was convicted of. Those restrictions you are seeking to remove were put in place bipartisanly to protect women and infants. If you truly want to help women, why don't you have a bill to increase access to adoptions or help women by providing funding for pregnancies? Please vote no on House File 91.
Thank you for your testimony, Maggie Hange. And then up next, we'll have Sarah Longacre. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Chair Mohler and members of the committee, my name is Maggie Hange, and I'm the policy associate at the Minnesota Catholic Conference. I'm here today to share opposition to HF 91. Removing health and safety protections for women seeking an abortion is an unnecessary and reckless measure to take. Many of these laws are long-standing and were passed with bipartisan support. Parental notification has been in place since 1981, and the physicians-only law was put on the books even before that. In the letter distributed to all members from the Catholic Bishops of Minnesota on HF1, they encouraged the legislature to, at minimum, build common ground around limiting post-viability abortions. That is a reasonable and quite generous suggestion. We should not be killing babies when they could survive outside the womb, have a beating heart, and can feel pain. In addition, minor girls should be protected from the harms of abortion. With these safeguards, they're not being asked to get parental consent, but to simply notify their parents. Giving girls information on their options does not coerce them one way or the other, and asking them to wait 24 hours is a reasonable amount of time for someone to decide if abortion is truly the best decision. None of these safeguards prohibit abortion. They merely help the expectant mother determine her path. Who are we as a state if we cannot come together on such common sense laws? Finally, the expansion of taxpayer-funded abortion is a grave insult to the many Minnesotans who are opposed to abortion and does not represent a one Minnesota approach. This looks more like retribution against political opponents on behalf of abortion providers. While we may disagree on the premise of abortion and what rights people should have, it is disheartening to see such a blatant disrespect for mothers, fathers, and especially for the unborn. Please vote no on this barbaric bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sarah Longacre is our next testifier, and we have Renee Carlson on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Sarah Longacre. I am a Minneapolis native, 47-year-old, a birth doula, and most importantly, I am a mother. I'm a mother to two stepchildren, 16 and 13. I'm a mother to my birth daughter, Sophia Love, and I'm the mother to Meta, and my daughter, Sophia Love, would have been six this past November. I did have a space for her at the table. I wanted her. I needed her. She was part of my family. And she, at her 20-week ultrasound, showed water all over her brain and her heart and her liver. She had no chance. And I only had one choice. She didn't have a beating heart. She had a beating heart because mine was beating. I did not have a choice. However, the doctor was there showing me all of the paperwork that had more shame than I've seen in anything else. And then I had to go home. After finding that my daughter wasn't going to live, I had to go home and face my other three children. It is crucial for my own life that I was able to have an abortion. This was not my choice. This is what so many cases are that people are not seeing. My life was at risk, and her body could have easily killed mine. This was not a choice. We need to make this safe. We need to make this the mother's and the family's decision. I felt guilted into something of going home and having to wait that time. I really, truly hope that you know that there are hundreds and hundreds of me out there, and we wouldn't have had a choice. Please think about the whole entire system and that we all need to have our own power and not the power of the government.
Thank you for your testimony. Renee Carlson, and up next, Representative Tim Miller. Go ahead and begin your testimony and introduce yourself. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Renee Carlson. I serve as General Counsel for True North Legal. HF 91 repeals all criminal safeguards for women, young girls, and preborn children in Minnesota, inviting confusion and consequences for courts and policymakers. The bill not only repeals the intentional death of a child resulting from an illegal abortion, it confounds the law. Under the proposed bill, if a mother and her preborn child are killed by a drunk driver in a car accident, the driver would face criminal charges for both individuals. But if the same mother intentionally, with premeditation, caused the death of that same preborn child by choosing to have an abortion, the child is a fetus without any protection under the law. House File 91 also disregards the strong correlation between unregulated access to abortion and changing social norms, resulting in a multitude of criminal behaviors such as reproductive coercion, sex trafficking, and sexual assault on young girls by adult men. Young girls have repeatedly testified to the horrors of coerced abortions to hide a sexual relationship with adult males. Under House File 91, sexually exploited women and young girls in Minnesota receive less protection than the sex traffickers that rely on the abortion industry to cover up their crimes. By repealing laws that are critical to public safety, House File 91 does not remove barriers to justice and freedom. It enshrines injustice into the law. Thank you.
Thank you. Former Representative Tim Miller, welcome back. It's nice to see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please introduce yourself in your testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you. My name is Tim Miller. I'm the Executive Director of PLAM Action, a sister organization to Pro-Life Action Ministries. This bill is riddled with infanticide. Both very direct and also potential. Direct, I was a co-author of the Born Alive Act. And if this bill gets signed into law, understand, members, that when a baby is born and laying there, reaching for and trying to find comfort in their mother, they're going to be allowed to leave that baby on a table to die. Some reports are as much as 10 hours. But it goes beyond that. And something you should, I have limited time, but you should really investigate. I've asked medical professionals, a woman can kill her baby, buried in the backyard, under this, if it becomes law. And it's very, very difficult to ascertain when that baby died. And if they say, I aborted my child, understand that under this, it's legal for her to do that. Understand the gravity of that. There's a lot of other things in this bill that point to this. The H.R. 1 can say that that's an abortion for all bill, but this can only be described as, is we're going to kill these children up until when people absolutely completely object. It's an abomination that we have this bill even before us, much less that it could potentially become law. Thank you, members.
Thank you. And I forgot to mention Christy Hall was up next, so if you could come forward and introduce yourself and begin your testimony. Welcome. You may proceed.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christy Hall, and I'm the Senior Staff Attorney at Gender Justice. I'm here today to urge support of HF 91. In 2019, Gender Justice filed the lawsuit on behalf of healthcare providers, the First Unitarian Society of Minneapolis, and Our Justice, Minnesota's Abortion Fund, that challenged the abortion restrictions in this state. And they were found unconstitutional by the district court, and the district court has permanently blocked their enforcement. Leaving these unconstitutional statutes on the book creates uncertainty for providers and patients in our state. And I want to specifically talk about one of the harmful and unconstitutional abortion laws, and that's the parental notification statute. So prior to this law being struck down as unconstitutional, Minnesota had one of the most extreme parental notification laws in the state. It required two parents to be notified, even if a minor had no relationship with one of those parents, no idea where they could be located. They could show up to a clinic with one parent in tow and be forced to get a judge's permission to go ahead with an abortion. This is an unconstitutional barrier on what is a fundamental right of people to choose to access health care. No other form of health care is regulated in this way, and all this law does is strike down these unconstitutional restrictions and make it so that abortion can be accessed just like any other form of health care. Thank you very much, and I urge you to pass this bill. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. That is all we have for people who have signed up to testify. But if we do have any members of the public who wish to testify, anybody? We'll get to you, Representative Grassl, assuming you're not trying to go testify. I don't see anybody else wishing to testify. Yes, go ahead. Please come down, introduce yourself, and you'll have 90 seconds, and you can begin your testimony.
Let me just set a timer.
Thank you. Welcome. Introduce yourself, and you can begin.
Sure. Good morning, Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee. I'm the Reverend Kelly Clement. I serve the First Unitarian Society of Minneapolis, and I want to speak specifically about the fetal tissue portion of this bill, the bill that says that fetal tissue must be, that's the result of either abortion or miscarriage, must be either buried or cremated. This assumes a level of personhood that we and our congregation do not, and I say that millions of Minnesotans may not assume that level of personhood for fetal tissue. Certainly any person who experiences an abortion or miscarriage and wishes to have that fetal tissue buried or cremated may do so, but it's inappropriate for the state to mandate that that tissue be buried or cremated. This puts a religious gloss and a religious manipulation into the law that we at First Unitarian Society and millions of other Minnesotans say is inappropriate. I encourage you to vote for this bill to remove these restrictions. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else from the public? Yep, come on up. As with the other testifiers, you'll have 90 seconds. Please introduce yourself first, and you can begin your testimony.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Carol Wickers. I'm a recently retired licensed psychotherapist, social worker, and marriage and family therapist. In 1970, I had an illegal abortion. It was terrifying. At the time, my family was falling apart. There was addiction. There was domestic violence. There would be no way. I did not tell my parents I was pregnant. I had used birth control, and I was in a very committed relationship and unfortunately got pregnant. And I can't even imagine going to my parents. It would have been dangerous for me to tell my parents that I was pregnant, and especially with my father. So I just really urge you to think about what you're doing when you pass this bill. It's really important. And also, I worked over the years with many women who've given up their children, and I can tell you that the cost of that is enormous, more enormous than even having an abortion. And I can tell you that many, many women that I've worked with have paid dearly for giving up their child at a time when, you know, having a baby would have been unthinkable in an unwed situation. So I urge you again to think about that. It's really, the cost is huge. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. All right, anybody else? All right, now seeing none, we will move to member discussion. Representative Grassl. You are. Don't you want to be first? Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, you hear the testimony of so many people. When this was in civil law, we addressed the Infant Born Alive Act, which allows the infanticide of these children, because if you want to repeal it. And now you've heard several testifiers, MCCL, and then the lady attorney up there, talk about the human trafficking, the sex trafficking. That should make every single one of us cringe, that these young girls, average age of starting them into trafficking is from 12 to 14 years old. And their life expectancy, once they've been started into that, is, well, 4 to 5 years. And now we're going to open the door for these young women to continue to be brutalized by traffickers and those who would try to hide a rape, because we're going to get rid of parental consent or parental notification. I guess with hearing this testimony, I would have to ask the author, how do you respond to this, Madam Chair?
Representative Liebling.
Well, first of all, I guess if I am going to try to respond and have a back and forth on this, it's thank you for saying that I'm giving you verbiage, at least, not salads, but in this case. I'm not an expert on trafficking, but I know that we do a lot of things. We have other laws, and we have worked, I think, bipartisanly over the years on sex trafficking. You have members, if you want to really ask about that piece of it, I think you have members on this committee who could really speak to that better than I could. I will just, though, remind folks that, again, that the parental notification part of that is being repealed in here, in this bill, is actually not in effect right now. It has been found unconstitutional by a court. And although people want to quibble about, you know, whether that's going to remain that way or not, it in fact has been found unconstitutional. And that parental notification is an exception to the general law that gives minors the ability to consent to all kinds of things. Now, again, we could, as a legislature, we could go back and re-debate how much minors should be able to consent. But the point of this is that abortion is really no different than other kinds of things that minors currently can consent to. So, but as for the specifics on what's been said about trafficking and all that, I think other members could probably address that much better than I could.
And I will note, Representative Liebling, that we do have Representative Pinto has signed up to testify, or not to testify, sorry, has signed up to speak. So I think he'll be speaking on that too. But I do want to go back to you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I was, you said word salad today. I didn't. Thank you for keeping me from having to say that again. But to allow this door to be swung wide open for the continued victimization of these young girls who are being trafficked, or these young girls who have been raped and are pregnant because of that, without anybody else knowing about it, possibly being coerced, being threatened for their life or life of a loved one, that if they talk, this is what's going to happen. I would hope everybody would just take a good hard look at this. And if you're thinking about women's health, how many abortions will these young girls be forced to have? How many will they be forced to do in order to keep them working? It's horrifying to think about that. Absolutely horrifying. And I don't think there's anybody in here that would want to see something like that continue. So, please, just vote no on this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks, Representative Grossel, for raising this. Yeah, I was really jumping and wanting to dive in, especially after the first testifier spoke. And I should first just maybe note for those who are not aware, in speaking about exploitation, sex trafficking, the testifier said that we had have the second highest number of arrests in Minnesota, and I like to think that my work through the years has helped contribute to that. So for a number of years, I was the director of training and protocol development for the Safe Harbor System, which addresses exploitation and trafficking of young people. I trained thousands of officers on that work. I was trial counsel with a colleague on the cases that have sent the sex traffickers to prison for the longest period of time. So the two longest sentences for sex trafficking in state history, I put together those cases, I charged them, I pursued them. They're in prison right now because of the work that I've done. So I think I know what I'm talking about from all kinds of angles on this. And I would suggest to you, Representative Grossel, to testify, it's the exact opposite of what you're saying. Traffickers use getting the girl pregnant and having the baby as a means of control. If you think that there's other means of control that's going to be more effective than knowing that there's a small child in the mix, I can't think of what that is. And I know many survivors who said, listen, I would have gotten out of that thing a long time earlier if it hadn't been for being put in this situation. We're talking about a baby with the trafficker. We're talking about a child with the men who have, and I call it commercial sexual assault, is what this is, right? It's where money takes the place of consent. Completely agree with that. What do we think happens with commercial sexual assault? There is actual sex involved, and impregnation happens. And so I would argue to you, this is the exact opposite situation, what you're describing. If you want to protect young people who are being exploited and trafficked, having a situation where they are not told by society, you have control over your own body, you ultimately get to decide what happens with your life. To my mind, that's a message that's the exact opposite of the message we should be sending. I appreciated the final testifier saying, in her circumstance, sounds like it wasn't exploitation or trafficking. I certainly would hope not. But she talked about going to her parents would have been not only something that she could not possibly do, would have been dangerous for her. How is it that somebody gets involved in exploitation or trafficking in the first place? I have found, this I'm sure is not universal, but the survivors I know experienced sexual molestation or abuse very often in their childhood, a situation with their family. This is not necessarily folks that we want them to be connecting with for consent when they're now in this young age going to dealing with this situation. And I'll point out that medical personnel are mandatory reporters, right? There is somebody else involved in this situation who will, we hope, because of the training we've done around the state, Minnesota's been a leader in this, that they're going to identify this situation, say, we have great concerns about this, want to reach out. But putting the young person through these additional hoops, to my mind, is something that's actually the exact opposite of what we want to do and would, in fact, encourage exploitation and trafficking. So I really appreciate the chance to share this, and thank you, Representative Liebling, for your work.
Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. I appreciate what you say, Representative Pinto, and I appreciate you prosecuting those cases. I've been on the front lines, and I've gone into places where they've been held, and they're running out the back door because they don't want to be with the police because they could be for whatever reason. And the thing that's holding them back is the fear that their family might be attacked or other things. So it's this is a part of it, but there is, they're getting held for other reasons and got to look out for this, their safety. The part for me, I guess I would ask is, late term, birth, and the mother is killed and the baby's killed. This doesn't take away from them being able to be charged. Unfortunately, recently we had a case in Lakeville where a mother was shot and killed and the baby died afterwards. And so I was wondering if that would exclude that from this this bill.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Witte, and I haven't met you. Good to meet you. So this is exactly what we were talking about when we dealt with the amendment at the beginning. Those laws are all still in place. All we did was clarify that they don't apply to a situation where someone is consenting to an abortion. But absolutely, those laws are still in place. Because, you know, what is the key issue there, really? I mean, the person is committing a violent act, presumably. Right? We absolutely have the right to punish that. And then there's a lack of consent. This is what we're talking about with abortion is bodily autonomy for the person who is carrying that pregnancy. What we're talking about in your situation is the absolute opposite of that, where someone else is making the decision through their criminal act to take away that person's bodily autonomy and take away their what they are doing, which is, you know, presumably wanting to have that child.
Representative Witte.
I appreciate you saying that because I didn't want it to kind of slip through and the next thing you know, we got a little loophole and we got to come back to something else. Or so just to have that clarification. And then the other part that was talked about, the criminal point. What if there is a point where a doctor does something criminally? How do you investigate that? Now, I'm not here to say who or what. I'm here to protect the right of the woman. I have three daughters. I would want the best care for them. And if I went to a doctor and they were negligent and they should be criminally and they did something to harm that my daughter, a woman, how do we criminally charge them? And if this is overreaching or an umbrella to protect them, we're re-victimizing these victims and we're re-victimizing these families. And we just heard yesterday on the domestic abuse, and I think we all supported that we didn't want to see re-victimization of females after an abuse. And now you go through something like this and we don't have the means to criminally charge someone that is negligent or does something criminal.
And I'll, before I call on you, Representative Liebling, I will say that the amendment, I believe that we adopted your amendment, helps address this because it involves the consent of the pregnant person. But go ahead, Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Witte. So if I'm understanding your question, the other laws are still in place. You know, we have a law against homicide in this state, right? And a person who is born, even if they're small, is still protected by the laws against homicide, last time I looked. And doctors also have to answer for malpractice. And this is for anything that they do. They are also answerable to their licensing boards for behaving in ways that are not ethical. So we have protections in place for all kinds of things. And, you know, we could say the same thing about, you know, if a doctor, I don't know, did some other act, you know, I mean, we've heard, you know, once in a while, you know, we have, you even hear a story once in a while of someone being sexually assaulted by their physician, right? But there are laws that protect people against that. You know, those things are prosecuted. So, I think that sort of the allegation that if we don't have these specific laws that suddenly, everybody is just unethical and just, you know, somehow doesn't care about their patients and things like that. It's just really a false messaging that is, that these, and that's part of the harm of having these laws on the books, is that they falsely message that we need this specific control. And an example I've used in other committees is that if we had a law that said legislators may not beat their spouses, right? Of course legislators shouldn't beat their spouses. What if we were trying to repeal that law? And then people would say, well, no, you can't repeal the law. That means legislators can beat their spouses. Well, no, it doesn't. Because, of course, the general law still is there and covers legislators just like everyone else. And I think that's the situation we're in with repealing some of these laws that are really there to create this climate of fear among the medical profession and really don't do anything other than that.
And I do want to move on to other member questions as well. Just a final comment.
Final comment, yep. I do appreciate you saying that, because when you first explained it, it sounded like it was kind of an overreaching piece of it all. So thank you.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And more of a statement, and Representative Pinto touched on this already, but speaking from someone that's worked in emergency medicine, worked in ERs, three of them all over the state, and our police officers that sit on this committee know this, that you've been called to ERs, you know what happens when people come in. Healthcare people are trained to look beyond the verbal. We look at everything. Everybody gets involved in these situations, and sometimes it's best that the parents aren't involved. Plain, simple, straightforward, because the parents were involved. And that's the scary part. Sometimes you have to protect victims from their own parents. And all of you have been in that situation. I know you have, because I've been in it. And so that's kind of why we have to go down this route, to protect the victim. This is all about the victim. And that's the same thing when I talk to women health practitioners. I ask them about these things, because I'm interested too. What do you do? How do you? And they've gotten training from Representative Pinto here and others that really know this area. This is really important, because as a victim of sexual abuse, you don't want to tell anybody. I was 12 years old, and I had a priest. Right? Most of you know that on this committee. I didn't want to share that with anybody, least of all to disappoint my parents, because they were devout Catholics. They would never think this would happen. So sometimes that child or that victim needs that assistance. So thank you, Representative Liebling, for this.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before my question for the author, I'd just like to respond to comments from the other members of the committee. Representative Pinto made reference to the mandated reporting requirement. I happen to have here a document from the Department of Human Services, which speaks to the mandated reporter policy. And they got a bullet point here in describing who has to report. They say, if you work with children in a licensed facility, you are legally required to mandated to report. Now, the argument that you're making here may have made sense had the majority on the House floor last week accepted our amendment to license these facilities. Instead, we were told that, facilities don't get licensed. You might want to let the Department of Human Services know that. To the author. I'm encouraged to learn that you value freedom and individual liberty. That is, of course, the basis of all our law. It's the founding of the country. It was rooted in that. I think what gets lost, erased might be a good word, is the fact that we're talking about more than just one individual when we're talking about abortion. When this bill was heard in judiciary this week, Representative Peggy Scott asked you a very simple question. The question was, when is a baby a human? In your response, you said that it doesn't matter what you or us or anyone else thinks, about whether a baby is a human, you said that it matters what the mother thinks. I want to explore that a little bit because, as it turns out, we already have in existing law a recognition of whether or not a baby is a human. In fact, you know to this, your Amendment A10 speaks to it. You amended language in Chapter 609 regarding crimes that we already have on the books, establishing laws against the murder of unborn children, the assault of unborn children, and manslaughter against unborn children. Now, it's very conscientious, or very conspicuous, I should say, that your amendment provides an exception for all of those statutes in a case where a pregnant person decides to give permission to someone else to kill their unborn child. So what I'm interested in hearing you explore is existing law clearly already acknowledges the personhood of unborn children. I mean, that's implicit. You can't murder a clump of cells. You can't assault something that doesn't matter, something that isn't a person. These are person crimes: murder, assault, manslaughter. So in law already existing, Representative Scott's question's been answered. When is a baby a human? By the way, 609.266 defines unborn child. This is in current law. Means the unborn offspring of a human being conceived but not yet born. That's in current state law. I'm surprised you didn't try to repeal it. So my question for you is, when we already have it established that we're dealing with persons, unborn children, who have civil rights that can be violated, and that's why we have the crimes of murder, manslaughter, assault, already in the book, by what moral calculus have we determined that one of their parents can decide, because words that have been used are wishes, feels, thinks, that that child no longer ought to have those civil rights, that that child is no longer human and no longer deserves our protection?
Representative Liebling.
So let me start with your, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hudson. Let me go back, first of all, to your first point about mandatory reporters. The section that you read, and I don't have that in front of me, but the fact that someone in a licensed facility is a mandatory reporter does not mean that someone who is a licensed professional working in another setting is not. And I think Representative Pinto, again, knows more about this than I do, but other people are also mandatory reporters, even if they're not working in licensed facilities. And, of course, that includes a lot of people like teachers and others who are not working in licensed facilities. So so that, I think, should answer that question. You know, I think that on the question of whether somebody is human doesn't really answer the question. It does. That's not the only issue here, because life is full of balancing considerations. And when you, for example, on the House floor when we did the PRO Act, there was an amendment to put some viability, some gestational limits in law. And I noticed that in that amendment there was an exception. There was an exception for rape, for a victim of a rape. And I think probably Representative Hudson, I don't know, but I'm guessing you probably voted for that amendment. So, for example, if there was a rape, and that was our law, and there was an exception for rape, I suppose that the fetus, it's the same, the fetus is no different in that situation than it would be in any other abortion situation. So, you know, there is, this really comes down to what people think is a sufficient justification. And my point, and I think the point of those of us who believe in reproductive freedom, is that the sufficiency of a justification and how one weighs these issues is very personal and private to individuals, that these are often difficult decisions, that people wrestle with them. So this question of, you know, is it human and is it a person and, you know, does it have a soul, and all these very profound questions are really questions that can only be answered by each person in their individual situation. how they answer those questions for themselves and how they balance it against other considerations. So the woman who was up here talking about the abortion that she had, you know, I'm sure she didn't talk about it explicitly, but she had to think about a number of things. And how does she balance those in her life, given the situation that she was presented with? And the problem is that we sitting here don't know and can't legislate for all situations. And so, you know, and let's face it, as lawmakers, whenever we put laws in place, they never cover every conceivable situation. You try to do the most good for the most people, recognizing it's never going to be perfect. And in this situation, because there's so much difference of people have different kinds of feelings, they have different situations and different ways of weighing these really critical issues, that's why we need to leave it in their hands and not be standing over their shoulder as legislators telling them how they should think about what it means to be human or whether a fetus is a person or at what point and how to weigh these things out, because we don't know what the situation will be. These are really critical situations, and as I said at the beginning, women are capable of wrestling with those things just like any of us and need to be allowed to do that.
Just, Representative Hudson.
Just one quick follow-up. I want to be respectful of the rest of the members' time. Okay. Balancing considerations. There are circumstances that are very personal and private that we don't understand. You've repeatedly stated here and elsewhere that politicians shouldn't be the ones who manage these situations. But that's the purpose of this committee. That's the purpose of this body. It's why they put the marbles on top of each other to build the building, specifically because we are tasked with inserting ourselves into whether or not we ought to be able to assault and murder and kill each other. So my question for you is, just to clarify, there is a line where we do say, even after all of these extreme laws that you guys are rushing through, there is a line where we do say a parent can no longer balance considerations and decide to throw their kid in a dumpster or drown them or leave them in the woods. There is a line where we make that decision. Where is it and why?
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hudson. Well, I think there is a very clear line, and the things that you've just described, I mean, we have laws against homicide, and those do apply. And there are situations where this consensus is so great that we do make rules for people. There's no question about that. I mean, we are here to make laws. But, you know, we do have a Bill of Rights in this country. We do have limits to how much government can intrude, and we wrestle with it a lot as legislators about when we should intrude. But this is a situation where we know that there is great disagreement among, we've heard it in this room, there's great disagreement around this issue. There's great disagreement among religious authorities about when, you know, when does the soul enter a fetus? And that is a question on which there is no agreement. When does life begin is a question that a lot of people will debate and wrestle with. And in these situations, and where we know that there is such consequence in individuals' lives to the answers to these questions, what I'm saying and what I think a lot of the members of here are saying is, you know, we may each, and we all do, have our own feelings about abortion and how, in our own situations, I don't know how different members would handle it in their own lives. But I think most, those who are supporters of reproductive freedom believe that government is too blunt an instrument to step in to these really critical, very, very personal kinds of situations. And that the safeguards are already there. I do want to mention, too, that we have had reporting on abortion, very extensive reporting for many years. And if you look at those reports and you really read them, you do not see the things that the anti-abortion people are claiming will happen if we repeal these laws. you just don't see it. And the laws, as I said, have, there's been no gestational limitation in Minnesota law since the 70s.
And I will note that just about every other member is signed up. So very briefly, Representative Hudson.
All I want to do is call for a roll call when we finally take the vote.
Thank you. There will be a roll call. The next on the list is Representative Becker Finn.
Aye. Thank you, Chair Moeller. And two things I wanted to touch on. And first is the mandated reporting. I've had bills in the past expanding mandated reporting, so I'm very familiar with this statute. And I did want to clarify that it does extend to licensed medical professionals, and actually if you look up in the statute, you know, we have that is delineated in statute, and it's, if you are a licensed professional, I mean, I'm not going to read all of them because it's, I mean, it's everything from the Board of Podiatric Medicine. So it's our medical professionals, if you are licensed, you have a duty to report, and you also have the duties as a medical professional. You know, myself as a licensed attorney, no matter what sphere I'm working in or who my employer is, I have duties under my license that I have to hold, the same as a peace officer, the same as a teacher, all those licensed professionals. That's why the word professional or a professional's delegate is in the mandated reporting statute. So I wanted to clarify that. And then I just wanted to talk a little bit about personal bodily autonomy. And we often talk about this in the public safety sphere as we're talking about withholding a person's liberty when we're talking about whether someone should be incarcerated or not. You know, ultimately, if you don't have control of your own body, you are not free. And so that's really where I think a lot of these debates for me really come down to, because if ultimately I don't get to decide what happens to my body, I'm a person who's been pregnant multiple times. I know what that means. And if I don't get to decide when that happens to my body, if somebody else gets to tell me when I have to go through that entire process of being pregnant, I'm not free at all. And so that's really what this is about. And the example I've used with folks, you know, if it's hard to get your head around being pregnant and you just can't get past sort of that example, let's say my colleague here, Representative Hewitt, needs a kidney transplant or he will die, and I am the only person who is a match to give Representative Hewitt a kidney, the state can't force me to give him a kidney, even if the consequence is that he would die, because it's my body. I get to decide, and ultimately that's, to me, the deciding factor on this issue. And so I just think that it's important as we talk about freedom that we're thinking about that person. We talk so much about the other being and when and what, and the reality is that the birthing person, the pregnant person, they have a say too, and that's, we cannot lose sight of that. Thank you, Chair Moeller.
Thank you, and I certainly hope you would donate a kidney to Representative Hewitt, though. That was, Representative Mueller. No, thanks.
I struggle to know how to phrase my question or how I want to even say this. When I talked about this on the campaign, I talked about how important it was for people to understand my story, since we've heard the stories of so many others. I was born with a congenital heart defect that made it so that I was told I could not have children. And so at the age of 24, I chose, there was that choice, right? I chose to make sure that if I became pregnant, I wouldn't have to make the decision of having an abortion. We had every intention of adopting because I want to be a mom. And I was told, because of my heart defect, I can't prove life expectancy, and so I can't adopt either. I listen to these stories, and I listen to why I understand about bodily autonomy. And this is why, when I talk about abortion, I've always said life of the mother. When we talk about being pro-life, it's not pro-baby. It's pro-woman. It's pro-family. It's pro-adoption. It's pro-foster. It's all of those things and more. The things that we're repealing right now are not pro-women, are not pro-family. I heard from testimony, and I'm a copious note taker, so I apologize for all of that, but it says here, we have laws that protect people against homicide, and a doctor has to answer for malpractice because of their license board, but you're repealing here that we don't have to go to a doctor. You said here that it's about consent. In the appendix, it says about the repealing here under criminal acts, unconscious life-saving. This is repealed. It shall be unlawful to perform abortion upon a woman who is unconscious if the woman has been rendered unconscious for the purpose of living an abortion or if an abortion is necessary to save the life of an abortion. We are repealing that. Where is consent in that? When we talk about consent, the reason why we voted for the amendment that had the exception of rape is because there isn't consent in that. You're right. There's no freedom when someone is raped. These criminal things that are being repealed. I've been a teacher for almost 20 years, and I have watched my students go through horrific things. And I, too, Representative Hewitt, have been a victim of sexual molestation. And Representative Pinto, it was a family member. And I had to go to my family to talk to them about it. And because of that, we were able to find healing and reconciliation. We are assuming that every time we have to go to a family member, it's bad. But sometimes there's holy and sacred reconciliation with that. I wasn't forced to, but sometimes there's holy and sacred reconciliation. There are reasons we have these protections. There's reasons we have these safeguards. And repealing them makes me very cautious and very concerned that we are going to really endanger women. I don't want to go into when is it a baby, when's it not a baby, all of those things. For a person who wanted a child, who wanted to be a mother, who wanted to adopt, what we're doing is harming women. And this is why I'm asking all of us to vote no.
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And thank you, Representative Chair Liebling, for bringing this to us today. And I just wanted to reaffirm some of the comments that I've made. Of course, we are not here. We are not tasked with controlling bodily autonomy. I think that's something that we, in general, tend to agree on. We're here to protect choice. We're here to protect liberty. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, in this conversation, we do often talk about thoughts and opinions, and I would offer another word for that is beliefs. And I feel that our job here in this body is that we protect the right for each individual to hold their own beliefs without forcing those beliefs on one another. And I think that that is a crucial piece of this House file. And along with that, I would say that we do recognize a few other statutes that are being repealed here, criminal statutes, that were meant specifically to control women, perpetuate heteronormative and misogynistic discrimination, and really criminalize consensual acts between adults. And those that I'm referring to are, we're looking at repealing sodomy, fornication, and adultery. And when we look at the language, it makes it very explicit that women are not to have choices over their own bodies, and even if they were to consent to certain acts, that it would be criminalized. So I just wanted to sort of center some of the discussion here today around the fact that, yes, we all have our own beliefs. We're not here to force them on one another. And repealing some of these archaic criminal statutes is a critical step to ensuring personal liberty, and I thank you for that.
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've heard a lot about how this bill, which you've authored, Representative Liebling, is going to increase safety. I have one question here. Is there anybody in this room, you, me, any member of the audience, who could perform an abortion and be held criminally liable for having done so despite having no training in doing so, no medical practice, and not being licensed? Could anybody in this room perform an abortion?
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Ingen. I suppose the answer to the question depends on what it means to perform an abortion, because these days a lot of abortions are done with medication. And so if performing an abortion means handing somebody the pills, I suppose that I don't know if that would be considered performing an abortion. But we do still have laws that regulate the practice of medicine, and we have scope of practice laws for different medical professionals. And the fact that we call something performing an abortion doesn't mean that it would be insulated from all of those laws and rules, just like other medical things are. Other medical procedures, I suppose, would not be, there are rules and laws that cover all of these things, and they're quite complicated. So, I think that if somebody did a surgical abortion who wasn't licensed professional with that in their scope of practice, I think they would be probably could be charged with practicing medicine without a license or something like that. I mean, it doesn't mean that anything goes medically.
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Liebling, last week, again, as my colleague, Representative Hudson, stated, HF1 repealed having to perform an abortion in a licensed facility in the second and third trimester. So going to your statement saying that there's medical malpractice that they could be held liable for, that's no longer there. So could I perform an abortion with not a pill, as you suggested. Could I use a scalpel instead?
Representative Liebling.
I'm not sure I entirely followed the question, but could you do heart surgery with a scalpel? Well, no, because you're presumably not licensed to do that. You can't practice medicine without a license, and there are definitions of what it means to practice medicine, or nursing, or, pharmacy. So, there are scopes of practice and there are rules about who can do what with regard to medical procedures. While I have the floor, I do just want to note that the unconsciousness provision that was discussed previously was actually overturned in 1976. That is not currently the law, and it hasn't been for a very long time.
Final comment, Representative Ingen, and then we'll go to Representative Novotny and go forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Representative Liebling, I agree with you. I should not be able to perform an open heart surgery. I'm not licensed to do so. This bill also insinuates that I could be unlicensed to perform an abortion, yet still actually go about that procedure. So I think that this bill is flawed in many, many ways. This is just one of many, and that's why I'm urging members to vote no.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. I'm not going to ask a question. I'm just going to make a statement because I don't need another well-rehearsed, well-tested, non-specific, conflicting statement. Everything that we say we're going to do, we contradict ourselves with this bill. We have protections by mandatory reporters. We've eliminated that. It's only going to be done by people that are medically certified. We just eliminated that. It's person providing reproductive health care offered, arranged, or furnished. All these protections are gone. I'm a man who reads a statute and reads the words for what they mean, not for what they imply or what you want them to be. I've never had a bill more easily that I would recommend a no vote I'd ask my members to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Liebling. Keep in mind we have another bill up still today. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. And Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for a very robust conversation. This clearly is a difficult topic, and everybody, as I've said, does have a lot of feelings about it. And, you know, I appreciate the civil tone of the conversation today. And would just remind everyone that a lot of what gets said about this this bill and this issue is not actually fact. I mean, again, you know, I get a lot of emails that say that this bill does a lot of things that it in fact doesn't do, because a lot of the laws that supposedly are absolutely essential are not actually in force and haven't been for many, many years. So I'm going to stop talking there and just thank you very much for hearing the bill and giving this important issue the time that it deserves, and ask you to vote for the bill.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And I'll renew my motion that House File 91, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take a roll.
Chair Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Vice Chair Feist?
Aye.
Feist, aye. Representative Novotny?
No.
Novotny, no. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Curran?
Aye.
Curran, aye. Representative Ingen?
No.
Ingen, no. Representative Fraser?
Yes.
Fraser, yes. Representative Russell?
No.
Russell, no. Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Hollins, aye. Representative Hudson?
No.
Hudson, no. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Hewitt, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Mueller, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Tapke?
Aye.
Tapke, aye. Representative Whitty?
No.
Whitty, no. With 8 ayes and 7 nays, that concludes the roll call vote.
There being 8 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Liebling. Next up, we have Representative Kosnick. And come on up, Representative Kosnick. House File 506 is before us. And because Representative Kosnick is not on the committee, I will move to lay over House File 506. My apologies for going late, Representative. And hopefully we can shorten things up and give your bill a discussion, the discussion it deserves. Please go ahead and describe your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Mueller and committee members. I appreciate
Hang on one second. Apologies. Representative Becker-Finn.
Just wondering if we can get clarification on that roll call vote.
Okay. Sorry. So correction for the record, there being 9 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you for that. I heard a lot of discussion among the committee, so thank you so much for that correction. Yeah, no worries. All right, Representative Kosnick, welcome to our committee. Please describe your bill for us.
Thank you, Chair Mueller and committee members. I was just going to compliment you on the way you operate your committee, and still a good job. I will be brief. I know the committee's had a long time today, and this is a bill that deals with equine therapy for first responders that have post-traumatic stress disorder, and we don't want to horse around with your time here today. You got it. Good. Basically, the bill starts a pilot program to offer these services to our first responders, and due to the shortness of time, I have a couple testifiers and some people that run the program that are here to answer questions. There is a short video if you're able to play it from there. We'll just proceed with that.
Let's try that video then. I know staff tested it. Push play.
Push play on the keyboard?
Right. With the mouse.
Oh. I see it. Thank you.
Abijah's on the backside, collaborates with off-track thoroughbreds, working with veterans and first responders.
My name's Todd Selner. I've been a firefighter for almost 25 years.
One of the most beautiful things with Todd is that he doesn't want to be vulnerable, but he's willing to put himself in a vulnerable place. Coming here every week. Anytime you're dealing with trauma, often we don't have words to express that. Our bodies express that. These horses are so intuitive, and they pick up on things going on inside of us.
The horses tend to play physically out as to what I'm feeling. I guess living vicariously through me allowed me to let it out, let it go. I wish I could explain it. I can't.
I am in awe of what these thoroughbreds do.
It almost sounds unbelievable, and yeah, I'd witnessed it myself. I had a bad call right before I came. My emotions were off kilter. The horses reacted. Whatever was going on inside me went through them.
When he's watching them lose it, it's almost like they're doing it for him. He doesn't have to. Like, they got it.
Definitely seen changes in myself. The Abijah's program absolutely would be beneficial to first responders, veterans, the support that they should get.
When our stories change, we change. And we have that ability to change them. That's healing at its finest. That's not a Band-Aid. When you walk out of here and you're transformed, that's powerful.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. I believe you do have some testifiers. Are you ready for them to testify?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I apologize to the committee. I could expound on how we came to the program and how it kind of works. It's well-researched therapy and techniques and licensed and all that. Let's go with Angela first, please. Angela Borkert's here. she has some testimony to share about the program, and then we'll stand for questions.
Yeah, great. Angela Borchardt, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Yes. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Angela Borchardt. I was a police officer for the city of Northfield for 11 years and with the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport Police Department for approximately 4 years. Prior to being a police officer, I was a detention deputy for Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. I am a graduate of Winona State University with a major in both law enforcement and corrections. I am a third-generation police officer where serving my community and helping others was a true calling. This continues to ring true. At the end of March 2022, I knew something wasn't right. I was having trouble concentrating, was paranoid, no short-term memory, and I was vomiting many nights when I lay down to go to sleep. I couldn't quiet my mind. The stigma of other officers finding out I was struggling was enormous. I needed help. Through different contacts and connections, I heard about Abijah's on the backside and decided to reach out. Sally called me immediately, and within 36 hours, I was meeting with her. She explained how the program worked, and when I arrived, I was introduced to the thoroughbreds, Wave and Boxer. Wave and Boxer were so intuitive. They immediately began to act out what I was feeling inside. Boxer started running, rearing, and biting Wave. Wave just took it. She moved out of his way as he overtook the ring. Wave's moves were solely dependent on Boxer's actions. With the help of Sally exploring my story that was being played out by the horses, it clicked. Boxer and Wave were physically showing me the unidentifiable, the confusion, the flooding emotions and thoughts I was consistently having that kept me from being present in the moment. There is nothing scarier than being a police officer and not being able to be in the moment. As seen, Boxer represented law enforcement in my life. He was constantly there without let up on Wave, who represented my life outside of law enforcement. Law enforcement had overtaken my thoughts, my actions, my emotions. The continuous, never-ending, what I know now as trauma, was controlling me. I have continued weekly with Abijah's. The team at Abijah's and their knowledge of working with police officers was so helpful in identifying my trauma. Because of Abijah's, I am alive and discovering joy once again. Unfortunately, my experiences in law enforcement are common. The unhealthy and stigmatized way we police officers are expected to handle those our experiences are common. However, having resources, having Abijah on the backside are uncommon. When they come along, we need to cultivate and support them. The amount of help Abijah's on the backside can provide, given the opportunity, is unquantifiable. $250,000 is a start, but because there are so many of us who need help, I believe that $500,000 or more will save more lives and keep more cops from leaving their career early. The shortage of police officers in the state of Minnesota is only getting worse. My hope is officers can find Abijah on the backside earlier than I did, and to keep those officers in the workforce once these amazing thoroughbreds guide them to understand trauma and ways to process it before it's too late. Abijah on the backside sees a need, knows how to help, but needs the funding to get there. Please contribute to their continued success. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, for sharing your story with us, and for your advocacy today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Representative Kosnick, do you have another testifier?
They're here to ask, be a resource for questions, but obviously this is in this committee as an opportunity to help our first responders better serve their communities. And I appreciate the committee's consideration. There are a couple letters of support that I would like to go over, but I'm not going to, from the National Alliance for Mental Health, the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, and the fire chief in Lakeville, the city that I reside in, also sent a letter as I've connected some community resources to help support this program as well. But if the committee has some questions, that's what we're here for, and I appreciate the committee's time and consideration.
Great, thank you. Well, we'll open it up for member questions now. Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you for hearing this bill. This is very important. Obviously, one of the things, you got peace officer, firefighters. I think it could also help our paramedics that go. A lot of times, being a former police officer, you answer the call to duty or the bell, and you don't know what's going to be on the other side. And most first responders deal with 850 critical incidents in their lifetime. They're not all the biggest, but they're always in there, and they keep going down, and this is a great way. So thank you for bringing this forward. I was had the opportunity to go out there and see what they did. There's other great programs, but the goal is when you get into this career, is to protect and serve, and you don't want to leave it. And if we can keep them in there, retention is more important now than just trying to the recruiting piece and keeping them healthy through this. So thank you for that. And just this week, we've had three police officers that have been shot, one in White Bear Lake. And those are incidents that not only affect the officer, but their family. And you bring that home to the family. So finding this outlet, so thank you. It's much needed. It's an avenue where we can help with law enforcement because it's only going to strengthen what our officers can do out on the streets. So it's just more of a comment than a question, but I would ask to consider that the ambulance or the paramedics in this part too, because they go to scenes that they didn't expect to see. So thank you for letting me have that time.
Thank you. Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill before us today. As a former officer and a person living with PTSD myself as a result of, traumatic incidents on duty in my short career, unfortunately, this is something very near and dear to my heart as well. And I wholeheartedly agree with Representative Witte that this extends so much farther beyond therapy for the person who's experienced that trauma. And I know for myself, when I went through not horse therapy, but other types of therapy to get through my own PTSD, that, that's the reason that I'm alive today, and it's the reason that I'm still married. And so these are things that, as you mentioned, it keeps families together ultimately and will, encourage officers to have a place to go to get the support they need so that they can come back stronger. And continue to do the work that they love. So I just urge members to vote for this. I think it's really important, and again, I thank you for it.
All right. I don't know if there are any other comments. I forgot to call for if there were any other public testifiers, so I'll just do that briefly here. I don't see any. I don't know if Representative Novotny, please. Go ahead.
I'm going to need a horse before the session's over. I think it's a great program. Thank you for bringing it forward. And as everyone has passed on, it's a trying time in law enforcement right now. So voice vote is fine.
Well, and we're actually laying this over, so we won't be voting anyway. But final comments, Representative Kosnick?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Mueller. I do appreciate a couple of the representatives that have signed on to the bill already. I apologize I didn't get to ask you individually. Things are moving kind of quickly. And I also appreciate, I should note that this is takes place in Shakopee and Representative Tabke's district out at Canterbury. And I apologize I didn't get a chance to talk to you. It got scheduled pretty quick. But it's a great area of the state right next door to my district pretty much. And I appreciate the committee's consideration time today. Thank you for your work.
Thanks again, and thanks to all of you for coming today and hanging in there with us. We really appreciate it. And I renew my motion and lay over House File 506. With that, members, we are adjourned.